Okay, Alexander, we have news coming out of Australia and an Australia general and a leaked classified briefing where the general says that war is likely with China. Actually, to quote the general, high likelihood of war with China. It's interesting because China and Australia, I mean, they're big trading partners, if not the biggest, is China. But once again, you have a high-ranking military official in Australia who is saying that war is coming. I mean, that's the vibe that I got when I read his statements. Just to give some background, his statements they're all over Australian media. They're actually all over UK media as well. So, I mean, I don't know what the situation is in the US, if it's making a lot of US news, but it's huge news, and the UK has jumped on it. Australia's talking about it a lot. What do you make of this general's words here and his statements, and how Beijing's going to react?
Well, first of all, these statements by the general are becoming actually quite mainstream. A couple of days ago, there was a press conference at the Pentagon with General Lloyd Austin, who's, of course, the defense secretary, and there was a US admiral there, and he too was talking in terms not exactly of a war with China, but a situation where there is now clearly military confrontation with China. And The Economist, which is one of course in Britain our most important media magazines, perhaps the most widely read and most widely circulated, its front cover is all about Taiwan being the most dangerous place in the world because there is supposedly a drift towards war between China and the United States and China and the West. So we're now seeing a whole pattern of discussions like this taking place. And you are absolutely right. In terms of Australia had until fairly recently been seeking very close economic relations with China. China had become its biggest trade partner. Australia had seemed to be interested in getting involved in China's Asia Investment Bank. All sorts of things seemed to be working well towards Australia and China working together. And now this is all going badly wrong. And in Britain, too, the previous Conservative government of David Cameron had also sought very close relations with China, and that is all unraveling fast. So we are seeing growing signs of conflict in the Pacific region between China and the West. And it's important to say it's not just China and the United States now, it is China and the West. Now, I have to say, I find some of this language dangerous and reckless. I think the idea of getting into an armed confrontation with China anywhere in the Western Pacific is extremely dangerous. But that is the trend. And we have to say, firstly, yes, inflammatory and wild rhetoric, perhaps, from Australian generals and American admirals and some Western politicians, but also Chinese policies and Chinese actions, which are to some extent increasing the tension, and some Chinese statements that are doing so too. And the things I'm thinking about is, firstly, this extraordinarily rapid Chinese naval buildup. I mean, there are now plans by China to build up to five aircraft carriers. They've now got two in service. They're building three. The next one is going to be comparable, apparently, in size to an American carrier, and we've already got satellite pictures of it. It will be conventionally powered, but the two which will follow will be nuclear powered. So, a very large Chinese naval buildup, and of course, destroyers, warships being pouring out of China at an ever-escalating rate, which is causing increasing worry. The just Chinese naval buildup is establishing China as a dominant military power in the Western Pacific. Chinese confrontations with the Philippines, a country with which until very recently China had actually fairly good relations, and of course some of these very strong statements that are pouring out of Beijing, the so-called wolf warrior diplomacy, in which basically amounts to Chinese diplomats going on Twitter or on their embassies' websites and making really very pungent and rather strong comments about the West, some of which are frankly provocative. So, you know, we're getting hardline statements from the West, but we're also getting very hardline statements from China. And in my opinion, it is the Chinese military buildup that is driving up the tensions to a great extent. And of course, it's China's own sanctions policy. Now, on the second point, I should say that the Chinese have a point in the sense that they did not initiate sanctions. But the fact is, China is using sanctions. It's used sanctions against Australia. And unsurprisingly, when sanctions are used, that creates a feeling in a country like Australia that it's been picked on by China. So we see on both sides movements towards confrontation. I hope that wiser heads eventually prevail on both sides. There was apparently a two-hour discussion some time ago between Xi Jinping and Biden and Blinken. Blinken was also on the call, which is probably just as well. That's another thing. But I hope and wish that somehow things will be, that some kind of modus vivendi will be found. I should say just as well that Blinken was there, but, you know, Blinken isn't perhaps the most effective negotiator either. So how that will turn out, goodness only knows. But there we go.
Okay, so some more background. It's Major General Adam Findlay, and he was heard in a leaked briefing as saying, and I'm going to read you some quotes here, "Who do you reckon the main regional threat is?" And this is Findlay talking to his troops and officers. And then he answered his own question, and he said, "China." He also said, "So if China is a threat, how many special forces brigades in China? You should know there are 26,000 Chinese special operations forces personnel." Now, he also said that to stop war from breaking out, Australia's military must compete against the coercive constraints imposed on Australia by China in undertaking its own grey zone missions. Australia's aim was to put the adversary at a disadvantage, put us at an advantage, and avoid war. So he talks about gray zone missions. The Sydney Morning Herald, and I'll read you just a couple more paragraphs. The Sydney Morning Herald said that General Findlay told his troops that if the threat of conflict was realized, the ADF needed to rely not only on traditional air, land, and sea capabilities, but also on Australia's ability to use cyber and space warfare. So once again, we're talking about these gray zone kind of tactics, I guess. And finally, to wrap it up, Alexander, on Tuesday, Senator Jim Molan wrote in an op-ed in the Australian newspaper that he believes war is likely. And this is what he said: it wouldn't start as a direct war between Australia and China, but would more likely be a war that Australia could find itself fighting on behalf of its most powerful ally. That is an interesting statement from Senator Molan. Anyway, those are some quotes to put some context to this story. Yeah. What do you think of this?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, first of all very alarming. And of course, when we talk about grey zones and cyber war, I mean, it is absolutely imperative that we now start getting controls and regulations on the use of cyber weapons, because this is running out of control and it is becoming increasingly dangerous, because we see cyber attacks now taking place increasingly. I mean, there have been cyber attacks, and of course, they can be done without direct attribution, and everybody is worried and concerned and sees threats from every side. And that is causing people to escalate. And that is what is happening. Now, that needs to be, I really have to say this, there needs to be a global agreement on restricting the use of cyber weapons. And that needs to be negotiated fast. And it's been proposed by various people, including Putin, by the way. and we really need to think about it and actually do it. But let's put that aside. Let's put the technical things about this aside. It is the politics, the diplomacy that is driving this, because what we've seen is a number of things happen. Firstly, we had Donald Trump, President of the United States. He came to office. He was very worried, in my opinion, absolutely appropriately, about the extent of Chinese economic penetration of the United States, of the extent to which Chinese industrial strength had been built up at the expense of the US, how our US industries had been hollowed out, how factories had been closed, how US companies had relocated their production to China. And Donald Trump said, enough is enough, this has to stop. And he started imposing trade policies which were intended to balance that. And if you remember, a couple of years ago when all this began, we were talking on the Duran about the need for a divorce between China and the United States. And that seemed to me to be an entirely appropriate process. It's one I endorse. I think it is in the interests of the United States to do that. But somehow, along the way, that process of divorce has gone hideously wrong. And I'm not going to point fingers, because in my opinion, both sides are partly to blame for this. The Chinese have overreacted to some of the steps that have been taken against them. I'm going to say it's also other countries, including the US, have too. And now we are moving from a situation where instead of a civilized and organized and orderly divorce over a long time period, which is what I think Donald Trump was all about, we're getting into a situation of confrontation and superpower competition and talk of war and threats of war and people talking about war as becoming likely and concerns about conflicts in the grey zone and talk about cyber attacks. And I'm afraid this is something completely different from the starting point we had, and it's spiralling out of control. Now, I talked about this conversation between Biden and Xi with Blinken there, and I'm going to say straight away two things. Firstly, the reason this is happening is because, again, there is no one in strong charge in Washington. There's nobody there who both can follow a consistent policy against China, and I say against China, a policy that emphasizes the interests of the United States and the West, but also knows how to conduct it and how to stop. At the same time, the Chinese are increasingly perceiving weakness. When Xi Jinping deals with people like Blinken and Biden and Harris and all the rest, they sense, I think, and you can see this increasingly from their commentary, that they have the United States on the run. And that is making them overconfident, perhaps, and over aggressive in some of the things they do, like this wolf warrior diplomacy that we're talking about. And that is causing miscalculations. So in order to bring this thing under control, we need a much more authoritative government in Washington with a clear understanding of how to push and direct this thing and a clear picture of the kind of challenge that China represents. And if that happens, I suspect that we'll start to see this thing dialed down and we will start to see changes in Chinese policy. The problem is, and this is the real danger, we don't get any sense that that consolidation of authority is going to happen in Washington. And in the meantime, without it, we have all of these people, admirals saying one thing, generals saying another, all of these people who are focused on their own particular fields. So it's understandable that military people see these things in terms of a military challenge, for example, all of these people are now saying what they have to say, what they feel how they have to say, because they feel that there is nobody above them to call them in and rein them in, as a strong president in the White House might be expected to do.
Okay, so the final question is this. Obviously, China is building up their defenses for some reason. I mean, that goes without saying. They're not doing this just for the hell of it. There is some purpose in building this mass military that they're constructing, and it is massive. So there's a purpose there. I don't know what that purpose is. But the question is how realistic is it to say that Australia, and with Australia, you're looking at most of the West, the Five Eyes and everyone piling in, that they go to war, some sort of war, cyber war, gray zone war, whatever that is, with China? Is this just rhetoric? Is this just rhetoric in order to increase defense spending? Is this just muscle flexing from politicians, Australian and from Chinese? Or can we really see some sort of conflict between Australia and China? And once again, if Australia gets in it with China, then you're looking at something much bigger in scale. So what do you make of that?
Right, let's deal with the Chinese naval buildup and the causes for it. Now, the important thing to understand with any kind of naval shipbuilding program is that the lead time for it is about 10 years. So you have to go back 10 years to understand, at least 10 years, to look at the decision to launch it. And what was going on 10 years ago? Well, 10 years ago, Barack Obama was president of the United States. And Barack Obama was pivoting to Asia. And people around him were writing wild and, I thought at the time, extraordinarily foolish articles about how the United States might one day decide to impose a blockade of China on the South China Sea and close the Straits of Malacca. So the Chinese, entirely understandably, it was completely predictable, they responded by launching this big naval program in response, in order to prevent that from happening. But when you launch a naval program on this scale, even if it begins as a defensive reaction to a threat you perceive from someone else, of course it runs out of control, because of course the more aircraft carriers you have, the more warships you have, the more submarines you have, the more sense of power you acquire. And of course, what might have started initially, what might have been conceived of 10 years ago in China as a defensive response to the, frankly, ill-thought-out policies of the Obama administration, is now rapidly evolving into something altogether more forceful and forward-looking and aggressive. So we see the Chinese now talking increasingly about, for example, using force to regain control of Taiwan. So you see how one thing leads to another, and though the decisions made 10 years ago might have been defensive, it doesn't follow that they will continue to be from this point onward. Now, will the United States and Australia and Britain and France and Germany, both of which are also sailing ships now in the South China Sea, Britain has already sent a whole flotilla there, will they really pile in and fight China in the Western Pacific? Frankly, I don't think so. Scott Ritter, who is a former US Marine and a US intelligence officer, said, and I'm sure he's telling, you know, he knows what he's talking about, that the US has conducted various exercises, or, you know, not war games, not exercises, about a war over Taiwan between the US and China. And China has consistently won until they actually had to change the rules to make it otherwise. Because, of course, in this area, in this part of the Western Pacific, the Chinese have overwhelming escalatory dominance, to borrow a phrase from Obama himself. So I think one has to accept that. I think one has to accept that on their own region, the Chinese are now perhaps becoming an overwhelmingly powerful force. The problems will really start to grow if what I said about the Chinese having acquired this vast naval force start to use it more forcefully and more aggressively and start expanding it into other regions, other seas, further away from China itself, where they are no longer seen to be acting defensively. And of course, they've already opened a naval base in the Red Sea, in Djibouti, and their navy is now capable of operating anywhere in the Pacific and in the Indian Ocean. And if they start to do that, then inevitably more and more countries will start to feel concerned and worried about that. And then at this point, if there is a conflict, one can start to see how those countries, Australia, Philippines, all the rest, might start to respond, not because they're any longer trying to press against the Chinese mainland itself or the seas adjoining China, but in their own self-interest. So the Chinese need to learn, need to know when to stop. And it's my concern at the moment that China, which at the moment seems incredibly self-confident, is buoyed, if you read their media, with a sense that, you know, they're moving forward. They sense, as I said, that weakness and indecision in Washington. It worries me that they don't know when to stop.
Yeah, a final question. Why should China stop if they see a Biden as president? I mean,
well, indeed.
That's just my question. It just doesn't make any sense for them to stop. I mean, if you look at geopolitics, you know, at how it works, right? I mean, you don't see countries saying, you know what, we're going to stop because we don't want to obtain too much power. We don't want to be, you know, too great a global hegemon. No, they say we're going to get as much as we can. And they see Biden and they say this is... Why should they stop when they see a Biden there? And why should they? What's stopping them? What is stopping China from moving forward when you see Biden there?
well, this is the point.
And I'm not taking sides, by the way. I'm not taking sides. I'm just asking a logical question.
Nor are we. And you're absolutely right. And can I just say, you're absolutely right in saying that most countries, most superpowers, if they see a weakness, they smell an opportunity. And the Chinese may very well say to themselves, well, we can now go on pushing forward because the United States is not going to push back realistically. It is too disorganized, too shambolic at the moment at its center in Washington to push back effectively. Now, wise statesmanship sometimes understands that if you push too far, too fast, then you may eventually provoke a reaction, even in that country which appears to you to be weak, and that it eventually comes together in response to the threat, the challenge that you are posing, and that will cause problems for you. A classic example of that is what has happened over the last 20 years in Europe, when in the 1990s, the United States just advanced and advanced because it saw the Soviet Union collapsed and it saw Russia in a shambles. And now, of course, it finds itself in a confrontation with Russia, which has now reorganized itself, sorted out the problems of its leadership, reorganized its military. And of course, the result is that the United States is now urgently seeking de-escalation. But that's wise statesmanship. What I don't know is to what extent it exists in Beijing. And I have to say this, I've been reading some of the commentaries that I'm seeing in the Chinese media, and intelligent as they often are, I have to say that I sense in them a sense of overwhelming confidence that is, well, frankly, cocky. And that can be very, very, very dangerous because it distorts your own understanding of what you're doing.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, China has a good statesman. And once again, I'm not taking sides. Objectively speaking, Xi Jinping is, for China, he is a top leader in the world. I mean, he is a statesman. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Going back to your Yeah, going back to your example, in the Soviet Union and Russia, you went from Yeltsin to Putin. Russia was on its knees, about to disintegrate, about to break up, and in comes Vladimir Putin, and the country changes. Once again, like him or not, I'm not gonna, if you hate Putin, that's fine. If you like Putin, fine. If you're indifferent, doesn't matter. You can't argue the fact that Putin inherited a country from Yeltsin, who was a complete mess, and he took that country from being on its knees to the point of complete breakup, and I literally mean breakup, to where it is today. Once again, like him or not, I don't care.
Yep.
That's just a fact. In the US,
Yes.
you almost have the reverse. You went from Trump, a statesman, and someone who had a longer-term vision as to how he wanted to position the US on a global scale in the world. He had a vision. And you went from the statesman to the Yeltsin-like figure in Biden. That's the part that gets me, is you kind of have the reverse of what you said, Russia, the situation with Russia. You kind of have the reverse of the US. And then I go back to Xi, who is, I'm sure, understands history and understands all these things a million times better than I do, and is a million times smarter than me. And he says, you know what? We've got 4, maybe 8 years to capitalize on this, guys, because I don't see a Putin coming out of the US at the moment. The way American society and the way America's, how can I say this, election infrastructure is, I don't see a Putin type figure or a Trump-like figure in the next 4 or 8 years. Definitely the next 4 for sure, and maybe 8. So maybe Xi is looking at all this and saying, this is our time.
Your comments are full of insight. They are absolutely right. Now, first of all, I've also been reading Xi Jinping's speeches, and you're absolutely right in your categorization of him. Again, this is not, to say that, he's a wonderful person or, likable person, but he is an extremely clever and exceptionally clever man and a very realistic one. And he has a very clear grasp of power and of power dynamics. And I'm absolutely sure that he would, if he was confronted with a challenge, he would know when to stop. And you're absolutely right in saying at the moment that he must be looking at the United States. In fact, we know that he is thinking that when he looks at the United States, what he sees is a mess. And he's probably saying to himself, well, why should I stop in that case? But that brings us to the real nub of this. Because ultimately, if you are going to start placing restraints on the spread of Chinese power, the place you've got to start is not the Western Pacific, it is in Washington, because that is where the true weakness is. And that's a point which I think Americans need to understand. They can talk about China all they want. They can speak at enormous length about, how dangerous China is, the wolf warriors, the fleets, the ships, all that kind of thing. But unless you have political solidity and strength at the center and a strong government, confident and clear about what it wants to do, and in full charge of the United States, and able to run its economy properly and mobilize the enormous resources that the United States unquestionably possesses, then of course you can talk all you will about China and all the bad things that it is doing, but the Chinese will see no reason to stop. And that's entirely true. But is the United States capable of meeting that challenge? Well, I've got to say, at the moment, I don't really see it either. But it's for the Americans, for the American people themselves to sort out and to decide what they're going to do. And of course, I say that with full appreciation of all the obstacles that are strewn in their path.
Yeah, I wonder how the Australian government looks at this, saying, Washington has our back as we drift towards some sort of conflict with China. But I wonder if they're sitting there and saying, God help us, because they look at the Biden administration and they say, we better have a plan B or a plan C in place as well.
Well, absolutely, and I'm sure they are. I'm sure there are people in Canberra who are thinking exactly that, and people who are thinking like that in Manila. And by the way, there was a recent article that I read by Gareth Porter about how US officials went to Vietnam and tried to talk to people in Hanoi and tried to see whether they could win over Vietnam to, you know, stand with them against China. And the Vietnamese show them the door because they are looking at the US and they're clearly not impressed. So I'm sure there are people in all of these places who are worried about the situation and who are looking at a plan B. And that's the point, because, of course, if it really does come to it, if nobody wants to go to war, if there is a war, there will be a disaster for all of these countries. So if they sense that American will and American strength is waning, then they will come to terms with the other side, because that is what nations have to do. Your comment, by the way, about, you know, when to stop and all that, it's a very, can I just say, very founded in Greek theory. If you go back to Thucydides, sorry to bring this up, he put it very well. He said, you know, that, you know, of men we know and of gods we believe, that the strong do as they will and the weak do as they must. And all of these countries, Australia, the Philippines, Vietnam, will do as they must if they feel that China is the rising sun and the United States is the setting sun, because the United States can't get its act together, they will do as they must. They will realign with China. And at that point, the US position in the Pacific will collapse.
Yeah, as we see it collapsing in the Middle East, day by day.
We've seen it collapse in the Middle East. Exactly.
All right, guys, I'm going to drop a link to the Duran shop down below, 10% off all the merchandise. I'll drop that coupon code down below. And look for us on Locals, on Super U, and on Odyssey. More information to come there, but I'll put links to those networks down below. We're launching a lot of big things there, so keep posted. Take care.